My encouragement today is, AI could be part of the answer to the challenge, the economic headwinds that health systems are facing today, but you got to do it smartly.
Welcome to Off the Chart, a Business of Medicine podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices. My name is Austin Luttrell. I'm the assistant editor over at Medical Economics, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. This week, we're talking artificial intelligence in healthcare as Medical Economics managing editor Todd Shryock sat down with Dr. Kedar Mate, founder and chief medical officer of Qualified Health and the former CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, to talk about how physicians and health systems can use AI safely and responsibly. They'll be talking about the opportunities and risks of generative AI, why oversight is so important, lessons that the healthcare industry can learn from the aviation and automotive industries, and how physicians can evaluate whether AI tools are reliable, HIPAA-compliant, and adding value to their work. So with that, thank you again to Dr. Mate for joining us, and now let's dive into the episode.
I'm here with Dr. Kedar Mate, Chief Medical Officer of Qualified Health and former CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, to talk about AI safety and governance. Doctor, thanks for joining me.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me, Todd.
So, what are the dangers for doctors and healthcare organizations using AI without proper oversight or governance?
Well, first of all, just to back up and say, I think there's a tremendous amount of promise and opportunity with the artificial intelligence technologies that we have today. I like to say that for the first time in healthcare, I'm an internist, a hospitalist, and I, for years, I think the technologies that we experienced in hospitals and in health systems were essentially supply driven, right? We had, EHRs and other health technologies that were essentially, I would say, foisted upon the provider environment, and the providers came kind of kicking and screaming to the party, on some level. This is different, and part of the reason I got excited about joining Qualified Health and about the technology itself is that generative AI technologies feel sort of palpably different to me than every prior generation of information technology that we've used in healthcare. And when I talk to health systems and clinical providers, which is sort of my everyday life now across the country, I find that it's not supply driven, but in fact, demand led, that clinicians are hungry for using these tools to help automate aspects of their day jobs that they've never had the opportunity to do before. The ability to see across data that they've aggregated over time in ways that they've never been able to do, handle these sort of really frustrating administrative tasks, documentation tasks, and other things that, they've really not been able to do before, but now they've got this really incredibly powerful technology that can help them accomplish. So, yes, there is risk in these tools, to be clear, but there is, I want to start with the fact that there's tremendous opportunity in these tools and that clinicians really are seeing that opportunity to help them, sort of throw off the kind of, essentially the cumbersome shackles of prior generations of information technologies. With that said, I think that, there are significant challenges. As I said, there are risks of hallucination. There's risks of models underperforming, over time as the underlying foundational models change, as OpenAI and Gemini and Claude and Llama, these underlying foundational models, as they grow and evolve every week, we have a new one that is, doing something new and doing something different. And, if the underlying models are changing as regularly as they are, any application that uses those LLMs, those large language models, to do a task, whether it's to assist with scribing and documentation, or whether it's to, analyze a set of your patients, or whether it's to provide guidance on what medications or potential diagnoses to consider, any application that's using those technologies, if the underlying model changes, the performance of that application might change. And so we need to know whether or not those models are changing, and we need to know whether or not the performance of the applications is degrading over time. And that's really what we built Qualified Health to try to do, to help us understand whether or not model performance, application performance is degrading over time, and to be able to understand whether or not the AI tools that we're using in our environments are doing what they're supposed to do, and providing the services that they're supposed to provide. So those are the that's sort of my short answer, if you will, sort of my long answer, excuse me, for to the question of kind of what was the risk associated on some level with these technologies and how we might mitigate that risk.
What's being done now to make sure these tools are safe and providing accurate information? And maybe what should companies be doing, to make sure either their own products are safe, or if you're using those tools, what should you be doing to make sure they're safe?
Yeah, so starting zooming out of the big picture macro, like kind of what's happening nationally in the federal landscape or even at the state level, there's lots of guidance on frameworks around ethical use of AI. I participated in one of those groups. The National Academies of Medicine created an artificial intelligence code of conduct, which we released earlier this year, after multiple cycles of interviewing and research and gathering information on what kind of what ethical use of AI would look like in medicine today. That type of framework is very useful, but it doesn't actually solve the problem of on a daily basis ensuring that usage is actually happening the way it's supposed to happen. So I think there are, at the federal level and at the sort of national scale, there are lots of frameworks either by the Coalition for Healthcare AI, the Partnership for Health AI, things like the National Academies, et cetera, that are creating these frameworks that help to guide ethical and responsible use of AI. But we need ways of operationalizing those tools in our health systems, in our environments. That's where I think companies like ours come in to help shape the take those guardrails that are being determined by these multi-party organizations, but take those guardrails and now distill them into technologies that can actually help monitor the performance of algorithms using those principles on an ongoing basis to make sure that we're not using these technologies inappropriately, providers or patients, or making sure that we're not breaking through those guardrails and using them in a way that we don't imagine or don't intend, and that the model performance doesn't degrade over time, as I said earlier. At a very individual level, very specifically at what can your eye as providers or as patients do to make sure that we're using these technologies in an appropriate manner. I think these days we see that there is lots of information that is publicly available on how to use AI tools successfully and usefully. Important to know that most of the publicly available tools are not HIPAA compliant. They don't protect protected health information. So what I've seen patients do, and sometimes providers do, which is a real mistake, is to kind of copy a bunch of text from a note, dump it into an LLM like ChatGPT, and then ask it to give me a differential diagnosis on this patient or suggest a treatment protocol or otherwise. And that is tricky. That is leaking protected health information into a publicly available tool. And so and AI doesn't forget, right? I mean, these tools don't forget if you place Kedar Mate's health file into the internet, it's there in the internet, right? If you put it into a ChatGPT, it persists in some way in the memory banks in some capacity. And so we have to be careful about not using the technology inappropriately, especially with protected health information. And so we have created at Qualified a HIPAA compliant chat tool that allows health systems to use a chat type function, but they can chat safely and securely in a HIPAA compliant environment with the records, with their clinical records, so that providers can take medical information from their Epic or Cerner or whatever EHR you're using and upload that data and now have interactions with that information using the traditional chat interface to help guide clinical decision making or support. And so that is the kind of thing that I think we need to see more of. And we need to make sure and guard against that usage that I just described, where we might risk putting public, private health information into the leaking that into the GPTs and into the internet in general.
Say, Keith, this is all well and good, but what if someone is looking for more clinical information?
Oh, then they want to check out our sister site, patientcareonline.com, the leading clinical resource for primary care physicians. Again, that's patientcareonline.com.
Yeah, I think that's something a lot of people don't understand is when you put something into these models, it becomes part of their database, and who knows where it will resurface. So I'm wondering at the individual physician level, whether it's a physician running his or her own practice, maybe talking to a vendor, or a physician working for a hospital who's been given these tools by their bosses. What questions should they be asking? Is there any sort of kind of, like the old good housekeeping seal of approval? Is there a modern version of that for AI? Or, what questions should they be asking to make sure these tools are compliant?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's no kind of official kind of, good housekeeping seal of approval kind of thing, right? They're actually just very recently, the White House has been talking about generating kind of validation laboratories. CHAI has been, the Coalition for Healthcare AI has been talking about the notion of AI validation laboratory type things for a little while. I don't, what you want to know is model performance over time. You want to know whether or not the tools have been tested in some capacity in real life, not in, kind of fake data sets, that kind of thing. You want to know what the companies are using, what the vendor community is using to auto-regulate, to sort of make sure, to check their own work, essentially, to make sure that the AI is not hallucinating, that it's not creating, results that are erroneous. You want to know that there's ways in which the health system is guarding against inappropriate usage of the technologies, But, truthfully, that's relying on the vendor environment for their own assessment of, of security, which of course creates a conflict of interest, right, on their end. So if all you're doing is trusting the vendors to self-report, challenges or issues with their technology, I think that's a problem. If you're only relying on government to create kind of an FDA seal of approval, which the FDA, credibly to its credit, is trying to create some guidance around appropriate use of AI technologies, that are, especially clinically sensitive AI technologies. But there's something in between this, and that's, I think, where organizations like ours, and we're not the only one, but organizations like ours are trying to step in to say, it's not just about federal badging that says, good or not, and it's not just vendors auto-regulating, but you need a way, a little bit like, I think of it a little bit like cybersecurity, Todd. We all know what that means, right? We are trying to protect, we have technologies that police the information borders of our health systems today, right? And the technology basically monitors for intrusions from external malicious actors. We have to have similar kind of technology that takes whatever guardrails you decide, whether it's the National Academy's Code of Conduct or CHAI's guidelines or whatever, that takes the guardrails and then translates them into operational parameters that technology can then monitor on an ongoing basis and to see whether or not people are not maliciously necessarily, but you have non-malicious internal actors inside of a health system that regularly leak, PHI into these LLMs. So it's not because they're trying to do harm. They're trying to do a good thing, help get to the bottom of a clinical situation. But they might not be doing it with the most appropriate technologies present. So you have to be able to guard against that. And importantly, I think that's what the technologies that we've created are helping to try to accomplish.
If you were evaluating an AI tool for safety, how do you measure safety? What does that look like? What is the metric? Is a single hallucination by an AI enough to say this is unsafe? What, how do you measure this very nebulous concept?
I'm wishing we had our governance experts on the line here today from Qualified Health, but there's quite a sophisticated rubric for measuring. There's the way I break it down to try to understand exactly what it is there a bunch of statistics about the performance, the technical performance of the AI. So there's, does the AI kind of work itself? Is it internally consistent? Does it do the things in a replicable manner that it's supposed to do? That sort of, does the technology work, right? Then I think of, and much more important to me as a practicing physician, is does it deliver value-added service to me, right? Does it actually do a job that is adding value for the health system or for the end user, whoever that is? And there's ways of assessing and monitoring for that. And then there's a third thing, which is, understanding defect rates, right? Like understanding whether something is not working, whether it's breaking in some way, overall over time. So, for me, there's like a structural element, there's a technical element, and then there's a real world performance element. That is, I think, kind of the three kind of components of how we understand and measure performance of these models and these tools over time.
Are there lessons to be learned from other industries? Like if we're talking about safety, the airlines, highly regulated, very unsafe, very important, obviously. Automotive industry, also a lot of safety regulations. Are there lessons we can take from those industries and apply to AI?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I think there's lessons in a broad sense around, from automotive and aviation, nuclear power. Historically, those have all driven, they've all been a their safety, healthcare has studied those industries, those, high reliability industries is what they're called, right? You have to be highly reliable in aviation or in nuclear power, or submarine warfare, that those kinds of scenarios, you can't tolerate. The margin for error is very, very small. And so you've got to have, what has become known as Six Sigma reliability in order to basically ensure that those industries are what we call highly reliable, right? And so there's a whole field of study actually in healthcare that's called, that studies high reliability organizations and has tried to integrate those ideas into patient safety and clinical safety parameters, et cetera. I would say there's a additional thing to think about here now, which is AI associated with those industries. And how do we actually ensure that the AI that's used in our industry in healthcare is also borrowing from knowledge around how AI was made safe in aviation and in automotive in particular? So as I think about it, I think you probably know, the airplanes that we all fly on every day, I always find it kind of interesting to know that, we regularly put our lives in the hands of AI, actually. If those of you that fly on airplanes, right? You regularly, for a very significant portion of the time that you're on board and flying in a commercial aircraft, that aircraft is being piloted or, manned by an artificial intelligence technology, right? The thing that's flying the plane for the most part is AI, right? And which is kind of interesting. I think that people don't necessarily know that. But we have to learn how to make that safe. And that, how did aviation make the AI technologies that it uses every day as safe as they have made them? Same with self-driving cars, right? Waymo became what it is because it has become very, very reliable at taking all the input from all the many cameras so that it can actually use that to generate, algorithmically drive a vehicle without a driver. That is a you're literally putting your life in the hands of an algorithm when you get into a Waymo car. And in fact, the one of my co-founders, Justin Norton, the CEO of Qualified Health, actually built his first AI company, which was called Trustworthy AI, because the automotive it was built for healthcare, but healthcare at the time in 2016 wasn't ready for it. And he ended up selling that company to Waymo because Waymo's interest in the trustworthiness of AI was very, very high because it needed to create that reliability that you're describing. So I think the short answer to your question, Todd, is we have a lot to learn from other industries, not only about how to improve the reliability of healthcare in general, but also how they've implemented AI successfully and in a highly reliable way in their respective industries.
there, folks. My name's Keith Reynolds. I'm the editor of Physicians Practice, and this is the P2 Management Minute. Here are two low-cost ways to simplify your practice fast. Number one, automate what you can and ditch what you can't. Start with tools you already own. Turn on automated appointment reminders, eligibility checks, digital intakes, and billing follow-ups inside your EHR or practice management system. Then prune. List every app, note overlaps, and retire anything redundant or not integrated. Retract workflows every 6 to 12 months so manual tasks don't sneak back in. Number two, prioritize tools that actually save time. When evaluating software, ignore flashy extras and ask, does this cut clicks and minutes? Favor intuitive scheduling, fast loading charts, and simple billing flows. If a platform takes longer than your old process, reassess or replace it. Value equals ease of use, quick setup, and minimal training, period. Automate smart, simplify hard. That's your budget-friendly reset. For more bite-sized practice tips and tricks, make sure you visit physicianspractice.com. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you tomorrow on the P2 Management Minute.
Kind of related to that, just like you wouldn't want a pilot using AI that they, you know, bought off the shelf or downloaded off the internet because they saw it looked really cool, you know, how can healthcare leaders make sure that people within their bigger organization aren't using tools that maybe either are unsafe or untested? You know, how do you make sure you as the leader are in control of AI usage within your own organization?
Yeah, that's great. Great question. So we think this is really important. This is we need to have health systems need appropriate governance around AI. And by that, I mean, not just setting up a committee, but arming that committee with very clear guidance on how to prioritize, how to ingest the, you know, large volume of very creative, very interesting ideas that people have about where AI can be useful, you know, triaging those appropriately. A lot of those ideas actually use data sources that are unavailable, that are not really necessarily subject to generative AI, that can't perform with reliability or consistency. So we actually helped a health system in Atlanta create a sort of AI triage system to help them, you know, take in the hundreds of ideas from their many, you know, their tens of thousands of employees, and then triage them appropriately for likelihood of creating business impact, likelihood of creating clinical impact, likelihood that it's even possible with the generative AI tools that we have today. Because, you know, with the exciting part of this is that, like, people's imaginations have just, you know, I feel like healthcare is going through another awakening, you know, on some level. It's this exciting time where people think, you know, people see this tool and feel quite excited about applying it to all kinds of problems that they've seen over time, you know, without really knowing kind of the nuances of what it's good at, you know, and what it can actually solve. And so creating that triage mechanism has been very important for this health system. And that using that triage system, they can also, you know, help to convert that enthusiasm of the people that are submitting these ideas into a more educated set of, you know, builders, creators, thinkers, so that they can create more, you know, they increase the likelihood of success of the things that are being submitted to them. And then they choose to build the things that they are, you know, either themselves or with vendor partners like us, they're choosing to build some of those technologies that have the greatest business value and the greatest clinical value and the greatest likelihood of being, you know, impacted by generative AI tools. And I think that's the other thing I would say about this, which is that we have seen the mushrooming of vendors and AI companies. There, I think somebody shared with me recently, there's 5,000 Gen AI companies in healthcare. And most of those companies, you know, do individual point solutions. They solve one thing, one problem, you know, and it is just not conceivable that health systems are going to be able to, it's whack-a-mole to try to go after one problem at a time across the tens of thousands of sub-optimized workflows that exist in healthcare. So you need you need a platform, you know, supplier of AI technologies that's going to help you across many, many workflows, help you make sense of the volume of interest that's coming in to greet you. And then, you know, in a triaged appropriate fashion, you know, build and deploy the things that are going to create the greatest business impact and value.
Yeah, I think like a lot of industries, you start off with a lot of smaller startups, then through attrition and mergers, and the best ideas kind of rise to the top. And You end up with the best companies with the best solutions. So, is there anything else that you would like to add on this topic that we haven't talked about?
No, I mean, I think, overall, I'd say, the ingredients to make for success right now that we see. First of all, I'd say that healthcare is in a big, there's a lot of challenges on the horizon. Being a healthcare CEO, I spend a lot of time talking to executive leadership teams of health systems today. There's a lot on the horizon, cuts to Medicaid, challenges in Medicare, lots of issues around squeezing commercial payers. There's significant challenges. The supply chain is challenging, et cetera. And there aren't a lot of levers to pull these days. They've already shrunk their employed the number of employees. They've already created as much of business efficiency as they can possibly create. They're pushing their payers as hard as they can on commercial contracts, et cetera. So the levers are kind of limited at this point. And AI, in the middle of all this, is this sort of big technological revolution. And my encouragement today is, AI could be part of the answer to the challenge, the economic headwinds that health systems are facing today. But you got to do it smartly, and you've got to do it with a partner that understands the how this technology really works fundamentally. And I think with that type of partner that can help you make sense of the technology, help you triage appropriately, and help you build and deploy successfully, it's the sky's the limit right now on what is possible to do with this technology. So maybe that's my final word for here today.
Very good. Very interesting topic, Doctor. Thank you for joining me.
Happy to do it.
Once again, that was a conversation between Medical Economics Managing Editor Todd Shryock and Dr. Kedar Mate, Founder and Chief Medical Officer of Qualified Health. My name is Austin Luttrell, and on behalf of the whole Medical Economics and Physicians Practice teams, I'd like to thank you for listening to the show and ask that you please subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. You can find us by searching Off the Chart wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you'd like the best stories that Medical Economics and Physicians Practice publish delivered straight to your email 6 days of the week, subscribe to our newsletters at medicaleconomics.com and physicianspractice.com. Off the Chart, a Business of Medicine podcast, is executive produced by Chris Mazzolini and Keith Reynolds and produced by Austin Luttrell. Medical Economics, Physicians Practice, and Patient Care Online are all members of the MJH Life Sciences family. Thank you.